Welcome to the September monthly policy update. Thanks everyone for bearing with us. I'm Micah Nelson with Independent Sector. Today we'll be joined by my IS colleagues, Anna Montanez, Ben Kershaw, as well as Wes Coulomb and Heather Mead with Washington Council Ernst & Young. Before we get into today's agenda, I want to go over a few housekeeping details. As part of our conference call feature, all lines are currently muted, and we will pause periodically for questions. To ask a question, you will need to unmute yourself by pressing star 6. We ask that when you are done, you mute yourself again by pressing star 6. Technical difficulties, please email publicpolicy@independentsector.org. We look forward to your questions today and appreciate your attendance.
Thank you, Micah. It is good to be with all of you today. I got a reminder earlier today that tax policy is not a new burning passion. Today marks the 339th anniversary of a tax revolt in the Netherlands because of a tax that was placed on cereal. So thank you for bringing your continued historical passion for tax policy to us today. We are always glad to have Washington Council with us on the line. So I don't imagine Congress is debating cereal taxes right now, but I have heard that there are some other issues in the mix that, you know, are sort of both directly impacting nonprofits and maybe just impacting the congressional landscape over the next few weeks and months. So Wes, Heather, can you tell us what's happening on Capitol Hill right now?
Sure. Thanks, Ben. You hear us okay?
Yeah, great.
Oh, good. Good, good. Still there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Perfect. No cereal tax on the horizon in Congress at this point, so we'll keep an eye on that, but nothing to report at the moment. The big issue of the day is that the Senate has passed the CR, as you recall, last week, given the approaching end of the fiscal year, September 30th. The House did pass a CR to extend the funding till November 21st. The Senate just passed that CR today. And so they're now officially, got the extension of the funding until November 21st, which will set up another, deadline and clip, if you will, on negotiations for the budget process. The House, I think, has passed 11 or 12 of the appropriation bills, maybe only 10, not all of them, but close. And the Senate has not passed any appropriations bills thus far. So they're still, I think, quite a ways away from reaching an agreement on the overall budget details. As you also know, we did pass a two-year budget caps agreement that set the overall budget numbers for defense, non-defense sides of the budget, but did not agree to the individual numbers, the individual appropriation bills, and also the policy within those individual appropriation bills. And so that's what they're trying to work out between now and November 21st now, since the CR has passed the House and the Senate. That'll set up the negotiation between this House and Senate, the leaders, and the White House as well on those individual funding appropriations bills. There is, I guess, a chance that they could try to take up a couple of those bills or kind of a minibus package between now and November 21st in the Senate, given the House has passed a couple of those already. I think that the appropriations process is somewhat stuck in the mud a little bit over other issues. We have, I think today, Senate Appropriations Chairman Shelby was going to meet with the President to see if they can figure out some sort of path forward between the Senate and the White House on this. Obviously, we'll have to get the House leadership, the Senate leadership, and the White House together in the room to figure out an end game here. My sense on the budget is it's going to be tough going to figure out the individual details, and they could, if they get something done between now and November 21st, probably not get all of them done, so they could end up punting a little bit until December, as we've seen in past years, until they're getting closer to the holiday break. It could force them to act on a final deal. So that's kind of what's going on that front. Also, you have obviously various issues hanging out there that need to be unfinished business. tech extenders, as you know, are still undone. Kind of waiting for a vehicle to get those processed as well. Obviously, the big overarching issue in the press is the impeachment conversations that have kind of emerged more strongly in the House for the last couple of days, and how that impacts the process going forward. Do we have anything to add to that overall? All right.
So let me ask you, since you mentioned impeachment, right? So we saw, Senator Shelby, as you mentioned, Wes, is trying to make the case for bipartisan action on appropriations. You know, a lot of people want to try to get a tax extenders deal done. What's your early sense about sort of what the realm of possibility might be if this inquiry goes forward? Does this impact the landscape?
Well, I think that it certainly isn't helpful, right? And the question is, what is the mood and the environment and the relationship between, you know, the House and the Senate and the White House in the midst of all this, talk? I think the impeachment process is not going to be over quickly. It's going to take months for that to kind of unfold. And so if you're looking at kind of the short-term, you know, conversations between now and November, now and December, on the budget and tax issues, hopefully the impeachment, you know, conversations will not be, you know, so bad between now and then that it breaks everything down on the negotiation standpoint. Now, in a couple months from now, as it gets closer to the House actually acting on impeachment, you know, maybe things will get worse then. But, you know, the real question is how bad does it get between now and, say, December, between the different parties, and does it kind of force them to basically just, you know, walk away and not agree to, you know, anything? And is there a government shutdown? Can they kind of at least get the budget issues done? What can they do on the tax front? Can they do a bigger deal on some of the things that are outstanding in the tax space, and maybe include some of the healthcare issues, include some of our UBIT and other charitable issues in that package? You know, what can they actually get done? Is it a bigger package, or is something just basically really small and basic and very simple in order just to get them, you know, out the door and finish up? So my view is it's still uncertain, yeah. And it kind of depends on how the next several weeks unfold in the conversation between the House and the Senate and the White House.
I think you make a really good point, Wes. I think, you know, as we think about the impeachment process, we talk about it as if it's a really clear process with steps, and we're going to do these four steps and then have a vote. The impeachment process in the House is actually a little more nebulous than that, and the Speaker has a lot of leeway in sort of both the time frame in which it proceeds and exactly how it proceeds. So this is not a single impeachment vote. What it is an inquiry process, and there are no House rules for how that proceeds, but it requires a lot of back and forth with the administration, hearing from witnesses, holding hearings, reading documents, and it's actually can be a very sort of long and drawn out process. The administration has already indicated they will not be able to move quickly to provide the documents that have been requested. And so, you know, I think, Wes, your point about the timing of this potentially lasting longer than this sort of next round of negotiations is a good one to keep your eye on. You know, the other piece about an impeachment inquiry, the House has about, you know, 210 votes. They've got to get a, you know, big majority vote here in order to move it forward. But then the next step in that process is that constitutionally, it is the Senate that actually holds the vote. You know, the House just votes to send it to the Senate, and then the Senate gets to hold a vote. And it's very unlikely, given this early messaging, unless something more significant emerges through the inquiry process, that it will move beyond that. And so, you know, will there be a large sort of disturbance between leadership negotiations? Maybe at that point, you know, it depends on how the negotiations proceed and the professionalism with which they're conducted or not conducted. But I do think there is a pretty significant likelihood that those votes will take place on the other side of at least these initial negotiations.
Got it. Thank you. So maybe digging a little bit more into what each of the chambers and what each of the key committees are doing. There was a hearing last week that was sort of tax code adjacent in the Ways and Means Committee. Can you all tell us a little bit about that?
So the Ways and Means hearing they had last week in the Oversight Subcommittee on the tax code subsidized hate, really focused on, you know, victims of gun violence crimes in there. There's also several, you know, lawyers talking about, you know, the tax-exempt rules, how tax-exempt organizations, disclose and are organized. And also a lot about, you know, and what I saw, you know, getting away from, the sensitive issues of gun violence and the victims in there, but like everyone agrees, you know, need to be respected and sympathy for, but also thinking of the tax law perspective here, the witnesses on that issue talked about lack of IRS resources to oversee and to examine the nonprofit sector. I think independent sectors have been out there, you know, in years past talking about, look, the IRS has been underfunded. They're not able to do a good job at adequately, you know, examining, you know, some bad actors in the sector or things that come up, or really policing that. And that was one of the highlights of the hearing a little bit about giving the IRS more resources to do its job on a going forward basis.
Got it. Great, thank you. And so, what about in Senate Finance? I know right there's been some maybe rumors of a potential markup on extenders in general. Any issues that the nonprofit community should be watching out of the Finance Committee?
Yeah, there's a couple things. I mean, Senator Grassley has not been very active in doing markups in the Senate Finance Committee. On the extenders front, he did introduce a bill with Senator Wyden earlier this year to basically extend the expiring provisions from 2017-2018 for another 2 year period. There is not included in that package, or at least the Grassley-Wyden bill at the moment, the 2019 extenders that were included in the Ways and Means Committee marked up bill. And Senator Grassley has been thinking about and mentioned that he's considering doing a markup of the tax extenders in the Senate Finance Committee. I think there is some split view amongst the members of the committee whether that's a good idea or not, whether you go forward with that markup. There could be the potential for some difficult votes for some members and other issues that could creep in that are more political, more divisive as part of the extenders process. Senators, for the most part, have been, you know, by part they want to see done, and so there's some view that maybe a markup is not the best way to approach it. So I think he's still kind of debating whether he could do that or not, but then they need to do something, either possibly introduce another bill with the Wyden that kind of refreshes the package they introduced earlier this year that includes the 2019 provisions, potentially, or have a markup in committee. I think what might happen, if they don't do a markup, it'll just basically then be up to leadership between, you know, McConnell and Pelosi and the White House to negotiate some sort of package deal at the end of the year and include what's in there from their view. And it kind of gives, you know, Chairman Grassley a disadvantage to not have a product that says, I pass this out of my committee, and here's what the committee voted on, and here's what we should do in the final deal. So I think he wants to have a markup, but he's kind of wrestling with his members, on the committee and what they want to do. So we'll see how that plays out. They could do something between now and the end of November, but he could also, not do something because he's conflicted with his members on the committee. What he is doing at the moment, he does have a lot of investigations and oversight activity going on. One space that has impacted, you know, parts of the sector is the conservation easement space. There's been some promoters and some activists, you know, pushing the conservation easement tax rules. And Senator Grassley has been sending letters to some of those promoters and some of those lawyers in part of those deals. And so they're investigating that space. There is legislation, as you may know, that Senator Daines has introduced to modify the conservation easement deduction to help deal with some of that. And so Grassley has been focused on that from more of an oversight perspective and an investigative perspective and not necessarily a legislative perspective. So that issue could at some point find its way in a final tax bill if they do something in the Finance Committee as well.
Senator Grassley's staff has also been really focused on drug pricing and negotiating in the drug pricing debate. His committee put out a large package at the right before the August recess, and that experience sort of is informing their decision around whether or not they have the votes to move forward with a tax extenders package and what that might look like. So in that particular circumstance, it was a situation where Senator Grassley had negotiated out a potential bipartisan package with Senator Wyden that he felt was fair and good policy, and he was unable to garner the support of his Senate colleagues. And it ended up being a 9-1 vote, with Senator Grassley being the lone Republican voting for the package. And so, you know, his willingness to move forward if he doesn't have consensus amongst all of his colleagues may be affected by that. He's continuing to focus a lot of his attention on the drug pricing debate now that the House has their own package, and he's trying to see if there's the opportunity to include their Senate finance provisions into the broader debate with the White House and with the House Democrats. So this will be a little bit of a process that will continue to affect their ability to move on tax policy pieces as well.
Great. Thank you. We really appreciate that update, Washington Council, as always. I want to pause briefly to see if anyone on the line has a question for our panel, for Heather and Wes, or for us at IS. Okay, great. So we have a few updates from the IS side. And again, we are always grateful to Washington Council for their time, their insight, and their expertise. So as we all know, independent sector and our community have been actively advocating for an expansion of charitable giving incentives for a wide range of reasons. One of those is concerning data about the drop in the number of dollars being given to charity and the number of donors. So we did want to flag that there is some new data that is really alarming from the perspective of people trying to meet need in their community, and conversely is pretty helpful and galvanizing for those of us trying to advocate on it. So the second quarter numbers from the Fundraising Effectiveness Project were released recently, and they continue to show this concerning trend of 5.8% drop in the number of givers year over year, and a 7.3% decline in dollars raised, with a bigger decline in gifts in middle and large donations. So more concerning data on that. And then on a couple other issues, public service loan forgiveness and Schedule Bs, our colleague Ana Montañez has some updates for you as well.
Thank you, Ben. So yes, last week, the House of Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Investment held a hearing titled Broken Promises, examining the failed implementation of the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. So as you may know, PSLF is meant to wipe away student loan debt for people who work in public service jobs, as well as qualified nonprofits, teachers, and people in the military. I would say that the highlight of this hearing was the acknowledgement by an officer of the Department of Education, Mr. Jeff Appel, who actually admitted that PSLF presents numerous obstacles for borrowers, and so that is huge, since the public opinion has tried to to pinpoint where the Department of Education stands on this issue, more specifically after data and a report from the Government Accountability Office showed that as 2018, only 1% of the applicants of that program have been accepted. So Mr. Appel also said that that low number is related to the program's complexity. And he also agreed or mentioned during the hearing that that the Department of Education ought to do a better work at explaining the rules to the applicants. In other news regarding Schedule B, we have some updates for you. So at the end of July, a Montana judge from the U.S. District Court overturned the IRS change of rule on donor disclosure, alleging that the IRS violated the Administrative Procedure Act by not allowing public comments as required by law. So as you may recall, last year, the IRS released a ruling allowing certain types of tax-exempt organizations to stop disclosing large donors as required on Schedule B on the Form 990. For all of you, so large donors are those that give $5,000 or more. And of course, some exceptions were made for 501c3 organizations, charities, and sections 527 of political organizations. So because of all the controversy regarding the public comment period surrounded the proposed rule on Schedule B, several states like Montana, New Jersey, and New York have filed separate lawsuits alleging that the IRS and the Treasury Department have violated the Freedom of Information Act by failing to respond to timely requests for documents. So far, what all this litigation has accomplished is that the IRS has extended the public comment period until December 9th. Yeah. So for all of you, IS encourages you to please make sure that you send your comments on Schedule B to the IRS.
Thank you, Anna. Appreciate it. One other update on an issue that has long been on our sector's radar. Earlier this week, a final rule was announced on the overtime threshold under the Fair Labor Standards Act. So starting on January 1st next year, the minimum salary threshold to be potentially exempt from overtime will be raised to roughly $35,500 per year. This will mean that approximately 1.3 million workers next year will start receiving overtime benefits who were not receiving them earlier. This is the Trump administration's version of a proposal in the Obama administration that had a significantly higher threshold and a few other differences, namely automatic annual updates or automatic updates to that threshold. So this is sort of putting a sort of tying a bow on that issue a bit. This is an issue that independent sector and many other nonprofit organizations commented on. Our comments noted particularly that the charitable sector's outsized role in the economy warrants special recognition, but also unique responsibility, and that for all people to thrive, they must have the opportunity to earn a life-sustaining wage. The comments also requested phased-in implementation of the proposed rule, revision of federal grants, contracts, and reimbursements to reflect those costs. We have not yet seen progress on those issues. And we also are calling for better guidance for nonprofit organizations to help navigate. So let's all stay tuned over the next few months as that issue develops further. we want to thank you all for joining us on this month's policy update. We appreciate Washington Council's time and effort. We appreciate all of your time and effort, dear advocates, and we look forward to staying in touch in the weeks to come, and we will talk to you next month. Thank you.